legislation, how we get energy out from being photon into other degrees of freedom. At the end of the day, we would like to have a hot universe where we can do nuclear synthesis. And to my astonishment, about a year ago, we realized that not much knowledge actually about the theory of reheating or preheating once you have more than one photon. So what I want to do today is give a rather lengthy introduction into reheating and preheating, tell you what is known when more than one here is involved, and then tell you about some recent work together with Tom Gibling and Jana Butterfeld, where we computed preheating in the case of 1 to 5 inputon fields. We did it on lattice, incorporating back reaction, all the nasty stuff that we usually ignore. Okay, so first of all, why do we need preheating or reheating? If you look back in time, you know that the universe must have been hot because it could do nuclear synthesis, yet inflation is actually a cold state. There's nothing thermal during inflation. So we need to somehow reheat the universe. The first idea was to do it perturbatively, to couple your inflaton fields to other degrees of freedom. Whenever the decay rate becomes comparable to the Hubble rate, you would say, well, my inflaton decays within a given Hubble time. That's more or less the old theory of reheating, which is known for a long time. This was proposed at the beginning of the 80s. About 10 years later, it was realized that there are other means of getting the energy out of the inflaton fields, means that are a lot more efficient in doing that. So if any of those preheating mechanisms are active, these are the ones that are important. If they're not there, you can still do the old theory of reheating. So it's not so much a challenge to get the universe hot again, but the question is, how do you get it hot? Because when you do preheating, you can get other signals too. You can get gravitational waves. You get actually quite high temperatures, which might be problematic. So it's good to understand how we get to this hot universe. I only mentioned two mechanisms of doing preheating. That's actually a whole bazillion of different types of preheating models. Mostly when you look at textbooks, they discuss maybe parametric resonance, where you couple your inflaton to another scalar field chi, you have a g-squared chi-squared coupling to the inflaton field. And then you observe resonances where you produce particles in spurts, and you can, within a given Hubble time, you can actually get most of the energy out of the inflaton. It's very fast. You can also have tachyonic instabilities. There is not a resonance at work, but with the effective mass of your metal field becomes tachyonic, and you, yes, question.
Very naive. I know very little about this field.
Feel free to ask.
So you said that the place was cold, but can you not consider the given swapping temperature to reheat?
As far as I know, no.
No, it doesn't give you enough energy.
That's no, it's not enough. Okay.
Yeah, the temperature is very low. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost good. Mm-hmm. It's almost good.
But it's not efficient. No, it has the sense of populating the reheat field like high.
It's high enough in principle.
So you have purely gravitational means of reheating in mind. You talk about the insult.
No, but it's democratic. Everything will be produced. No, it's everything. It's a gravitational effect. So coupling is gravitational. So reheating will be gravitational.
Right.
So as he said, very inefficient.
Yeah, but you say the temperature is H.
So it's H is very
large. Yeah, but let's put it another way.
Right.
So you get H for, so it's too small an energy density.
But too small for what?
For reheating. I mean, the energy density of the universe is higher than the energy density stored in the
Oh, that's a good
problem. Much higher.
But there are these claims by Richard Hooder that if you're at higher orders, this can actually add up, and this perturbation can add up and numb the universe. So that's basically the claim that the situation is unstable under these quantum fluctuations. But that's at higher orders, not at the.
It's a very small effect.
But if it adds up, then if it grows with logarithmically with time, then eventually it can get big. But at lowest order, it's very small.
But if that happened, then inflation would have problems anyway, right?
Well, very long inflation would have problems. So it takes, because it's very slow. So at 64, we don't have any problem. Maybe 1,000 on the phone.
Maybe to put it another way, there are actually several means by which you can get a larger temperature. These gravitational effects are clearly the ones that are most inefficient. Right? So if you have even some usual coupling throughout fields, you should do just the reheating of some thermal gravitation. So if you have any of those preheating mechanisms in place, these are the ones that are dominant. If you have nothing else present, then you could try something very good. Now, a few other remarks on preheating. You usually achieve very high temperatures during preheating because you do it immediately after inflation and you convert almost all of the energy which you have in the degrees of freedom which drive inflation. Almost all of this energy gets converted into radiation or thermal matter. So temperatures are high of the order of 10 to the 15 GeV, which might be good for GeV baryogenesis. However, you usually run into problems with radix. Inflation was introduced to get rid of radix in the first place, but hopefully we reduce it.
Is it clear? I mean, how do you know that you get high temperatures? I mean, the preheating state is pretty far from thermal.
Exactly. This is we need a subsequent phase of thermalization. So yes, preheating does not generate a thermal phase. The phase of thermalization, actually, first of all, after preheating, you have a chaotic phase where the energy which you have in complete wave numbers gets spread out over other wave numbers, and then you have a thermalization phase when you actually reach a thermal state. This takes some time. So this influences the reheating temperature, but it's still true that you generically get quite high temperatures. To make it precise, in order to avoid gravitino bounds, you would like to be below 10 to the 9 GeV. Some bounds are even lower than that. So it is problematic to have very high energy. That means to get rid of this, but
this becomes very model dependent, right? Like how you actually couple this scalar filtered standard model and
indices. So there are ways around this gravitino problem, but you have to do something extra. As I mentioned it here, to make you aware of having preheating is not necessarily a good thing. You might introduce new problems which you have to get rid of. So sometimes you hear talks that, yeah, we really want to have preheating. It would be fine if we all see your preheating, it would be fine too. But if it's there, you better know if it's there. You better know if you're preheating, because then you have to think harder about such problems. Another unrelated application of the whole theory of preheating has nothing to do with preheating. It is model light trapping at local and enhanced symmetry. So this is a dynamical mechanism to trap model light. Landscape uses the same mass. So everything you do usually in discussing preheating can also apply in different areas. From that point of view, simply from might also be interesting to understand what happens if you have several moduli that you would stabilize. Can you still use these notion of moduli trapping at constant points? Unrelated, well, it's another application of this, which is not related to reheating. Since this is a workshop on phenomenological models of inflation, so this whole proposal is going to be phenomenological because we don't really know what drives inflation. There are a few models around, but there's not one canonical model, and we know even less about the coupling of the inflaton in those models to ordinary matter. And mostly what I'm going to do in the following is I'm coupling it to some other scalar field chi, which I assume is going to be coupled to fermions and other stuff. So the chi field is not constrained in its coupling to other degrees of freedom, while the inflaton field is constrained. We don't want to couple it strongly to other stuff.
Are you going to automatically assume that the couplings are weak enough such that chi don't change the structure of the inflaton potential?
Yes.
So and that's easy to impose in general.
Well,
in a way, you can describe what that would be.
Coupling small.
And so the main point of this talk is going to be that for multiple inflaton fields, not much is known. I'm going to try to show you what is known. So why would we consider multiple inflaton fields? First of all, I think it's kind of natural in string theory. Whenever I look into a string theory book, I see so many new things. I see moduli fields, I see membranes, I see fluxes. And then at the end of the day, we have one scalar field, long potential. So from this point of view, I think multi-field models are kind of natural. They might not be the easiest models to construct or the easiest models to compute a potential for, but they're clearly not any more fine-tuned or special than single-field models. Other way around, okay, not true. You can do some interesting things if you have multiple fields around, because of the minimum assisted inflation. If you have many fields, you can avoid that any individual field travels a large distance in field space. That might be nice. You can also make potentials work which are steeper because an individual field sees the combined Hubble friction of all the other fields, but the driving force of its own potential. For that reason, you can use potentials which you would usually say are too steep to drive inflation, single field inflation. But you can make them work in this framework of system inflation.
But I think it's perhaps important to say at that point that if you have a problematic input on mass term, then assisted inflation doesn't get rid of that.
Yes.
So an unsuitable inflaton replicated n times does not produce a suitable collective.
Correct. Therefore, I was actually careful not to mention the eta problem here. I wouldn't claim that you can avoid the eta problem in multiple fields. Naturally, you still have.
Well, I would say that's sort of related to the reduced budgeting. I mean, I'm objecting to the last two terms. Certainly, there's increased Hubble friction, but I'm not really sure that steeper potentials work. I mean, is there an example of that?
Well, I think,
for example, I would say
when you simply look at the slow roll parameters, they do not necessarily constrain the potential as much as you would have for a single field.
There's always some underlying forehand
evolution. Yeah, exactly. True. You have to make sure that you first of all have a lot of fields around that should all hold.
Yeah,
they all kind of seem to share. Yes, I agree with that. So it is, but there are some nice ideas that you can try to apply. Now, concrete examples are actually known. There's a bunch of them. Can try to drive inflation from axions. Inflation, very popular, was being covered in the W5 paper, without a zillion of other models to be discussed. You can try to use N theory and a bunch of confined frames. You have the distance between brains, these correspond to inflaton fields, and you have the order of 100 brains, they separate, you drive inflation. You can use tachyons, this corresponds to distances between deep brains in a high dimensional setup. You can try to drive inflation in the landscape. Some recent work with Diana, also, and we tie in some work on using random potentials for that. So there's a bunch of models around for multi-field inflationary models, which are, I would say, well-motivated from string theory, maybe not derived from string theory, but it was simply more difficult to derive those from string theory. But they are around. And
I mean, at least the first three examples don't work. So, I mean, I don't know the last one as well as the other four present, but let me say the first three fail. So I think this is, I agree totally with the statement that multi-field models are well motivated, but
it is not challenging to say that a concrete model that avoids all problems. I agree with that. It's simply more complicated to construct them, but our inability to construct them doesn't mean that they are not possible. I mean, here we pick out one degree of freedom and simply multiply. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they're any harder to construct than single field models. It's just that the claims that replication of fields will solve certain problems have not been borne out in at least the examples produced so far. But as a phenomenological idea, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I'm not dependent on any concrete model because I'm doing that. But I'm going to assume simply there's a bunch of inflaton fields. And but before I do this, I give a short review of what is known, first of all, about single fields preheating. So this is going to be a review for a few in the audience. Then I'm going to talk about two fields. What's the difference between one inflaton and two inflaton fields? That are actually quite drastic difference already at the level of preheating.
And operationally, when you say there's more than one inflaton, you just mean more than one field whose mass is less than the Hubble constant.
Yes. And I would like these fields to have still a reasonable amount of energy at the end of the inflation. You could also try to do something in a staggered fashion where one of the other drops out and the end field left out with one inflaton field which carries the majority of the energy. And then you have single field reheating or preheating, even though during inflation several fields were dynamical. But what I have in mind right now is several fields have share the energy at the end of the inflation.
Are you going to say anything about entropy perturbations?
No.
So if you have the sharing energy and no one each one needs to dominate the energy density to get rid of entropy perturbations.
Well, you have to definitely bother about entropy perturbations once you discuss the generation of perturbations during inflation. What you do during preheating, this is usually so fast that you don't really, on very small scales within the horizon, that whatever you do, it does not influence large scale structures.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the preheating phase, but I guess if you had these fields playing some role during inflation and they generate some entropy perturbation.
Yes, sure.
They need to compile the adiabatic during, and they would have to each dominate solely the energy density at some point.
So yes, so I'm not concerned about trying to now do the curvature scenario here.
Okay,
so, right. So I think this was your question, how to convert isocurvature perturbations to adiabatic perturbations in the face of reheating or preheating. You can do that, but that's not going to be the topic.
So you're starting.
I would first agree to understand, can we get preheating in the first place? And I'm going to see that no generic model.
Are you separating between multi-inflate plants versus multi-fume inflate plants?
Multi-fume inflate
plant. Multi-fume inflate plant, I would consider it's like a inflate plant in a multi-dimensional field, potential, right? Multi-inflate plant would be like assisted inflation, right?
Yes. So I'm assisted inflation.
So, okay, you're thinking that.
Yeah.
As opposed to like an all-in model where you have one.
Now, after this review, I'm going to discuss some recent work where we put up to five inflatons on a lattice at the end of inflation. We let them oscillate around the minimum and couple it to a single scalar field, discuss a variety of couplings, and we ask, can we get preheating? So we discuss Fallot interactions, the usual chi-square, phi-square couplings, Swedek interactions where we have a phi chi-square coupling or a mixture of both of them. And we're going to see that for the interactions, because it's a classic parametric resonance case, is not going to be possible if you have more than two fields, which is an interesting result. I think my battery will start. So what potential am I considering? A very simple potential. So as you see, I do not assume that the inflatons are not coupled to each other. Simplicity in here. This first part is the inflaton potential expounded around some minimum. I do not really care how the potential looks during inflation, but I'm going to assume that at the end of inflation it goes to some minimum, and then I expand around this minimum, and I keep the leading order. So they don't usually have different masses. It would be quite astonishing if they would have all the same masses, if they have lots of different masses. The second term is a coupling of the inflaton to my preheat matter field chi. Chi is simply another scalar field, which I assume is going to decay later on. But again, I'm not going to concern about reheating. I would like to discuss, can I get the energy from phi to this chi field? So this is a Swedek interaction, which we can turn on or off depending on what value of signal we choose. And here we have the usual Fallot interaction, which leads to parametric resonance. The Swedek interaction, this causes a tachyonic mass for the preheat matter field chi, so this leads to tachyonic preheating and this parametric resonance.
For the field models. The distinction between chi and the phi eyes is just initial conditions.
Yeah, just initial conditions. A bunch of scalar fields found, and initially we put chi at zero, but we also get the gradients, so we already have the relationship. And the last term, we only incorporate because if we don't, the automatic control tends to be unstable. So we prevent some runaway behavior of this chi, introducing a small self-interaction of the chi into the cell. It does not greatly influence the preheating. So we keep this small, but we keep it so large that our code is unstable. I'm not going to talk more about this. Now, if you only have a single inflaton field, the equation of motion for chi is as follows. Usual Tangorian equation where you have an effective mass in here, it's k dependent, and you see the mass, effective mass gets modulated by the oscillations of the inflaton around its minimum. And these oscillations are causing resonances in this equation of motion. In fact, if you ignore Hubble expansion in here, you can write this in terms of the Mathieu equation, and it is known that the Mathieu equation has stability and instability bands. So you're going to produce modes at certain wave numbers whenever the high field becomes nearly massless. So whenever phi goes to zero, you have a spurt of particle production of those high bosons. And so as I just said, here is the phi squared. So this is the contribution of the inflatons to the effective mass of the high field over time. Tau is scaled with respect to the mass of the inflaton field. So you see, this corresponds to the oscillations in the inflaton field. And whenever this becomes very small, whenever it's zero, the denominator of this parameter becomes large, and you get spurred of particle production here. And what I also included in here is the expansion of the universe, so it's not exactly the Maxwell equation, and modes shift through different resonance bands. Sometimes a mode resides in a stability band, and then it would not increase, but it would actually decrease. So this goes on the name of stochastic resonance. But to understand that, simply you need to realize whenever this guy becomes light, whenever it becomes close to zero, you usually get a burst of particle production most of the time. What is plotted here is the particle number, if I don't show the definition. You can understand this type of preheating very well analytically too. I'm not going to go into the math of that, but basically, this turns into a math equation. You can discuss the stability and instability bands, and you would discuss, let's say, the chart where you plot A or Q. A is related to the wave number, and Q is related to the coupling and the initial oscillation amplitude of your inputon field, the mass of the inputon field. Now, when you have an expanding universe, you're actually moving through this plot, you see that you cut through stability and instability bands. And whenever you are in the instability band, you get a Fouquet index, which is larger than zero, which is not imaginary. So your high field increases exponentially. This exponent is the Fouquet index here. To wrap it up, you can understand perfectly well single field preheating with G squared, phi squared interactions. Analytically, you can compute actually what the values of mu are, given your model, given you know G, you know M, the initial amplitude, you know where you are in this plot, you include the expansion of the universe, you move through it, and then you move along this plot, and then you have whatever mu is bigger than zero, you get a burst of particle production. Nothing fancy has been known for 20 years. Now, something interesting happens if you have now two inflaton fields. So, we still have sigma equals to zero, so we do not turn on tachyon contributions, and we do not include the decoration yet. And there, what happens is that the stability bands, they dissolve into a nowhere dense set, meaning almost all modes of the chi field have a positive Fouquet index. There is a lot of literature in the math, actually, about that, mathematical literature, where you apply spectral theory, and you have theorems that it gives you its results. However, not much is known about the amplitude of the generalized Fouquet index.
When you say no back reaction, you're saying you're analyzing this in the you don't calculate what's the energy density created by chi and back reaction with that. But you know, lattice simulation is simply
good. Yeah, so I'm going to include back reaction. Okay. But these studies they did not. So I can only say what they did. They did not include. And back reaction, of course, becomes important after the first few spurts of particle production. The fields become inhomogeneous, and then you cannot simply put it into maple. You have to do it better. Also, at the end of the day, you would like that the energy chi field dominates. So that definitely back reaction is going to be important. It's not back reaction anymore, because chi is the most important field. Anyway, so, but that's the stage, that's the beginning of preheating. So you have this result that almost all modes have a positive Fouquet index. And this means that you should expect amplification of almost all modes, so preheating should be enhanced. So Tabri and Bassett did computation in Maple and Mathematica, and they indeed observed enhanced particle production. And you can understand this by looking again at those stability and instability charts. This is mu plotted over Q again. And almost all modes have now a mu which is bigger than zero. So this shows you that almost all modes actually get amplified. So you get more amplification than in the standard single field permanent resonance case. And what happens during when you incorporate an expansion of the universe is you move now to this plot, and you see the stability bands, they become really narrow things. So they are measure of set zero. They have a bit of set of measure zero.
Is there sort of just some kind of intuition to see why this happens when you just add one more field?
Yes. If you can recast the equation of motion for chi in terms of the Schrödinger equation, and what you would look now is to compute the spectrum of the Schrödinger equation. So if you have only a single field, you have a periodic potential, and solid state physics, you get a Venn structure, what the others can be. So similar in here. Now actually, the modes which have positive decay index there are the complement of the spectrum. Now if you include another field, and the ratio of the frequencies of those fields, not a simple number, you get a quasi-periodic potential. And then you can get energies almost everywhere. So it's a complement of that. Yeah. So yes, there is a nice analogy how you can escape from solid state physics.
What happens if you complexify the field and you make the product complex or tie to this complex? You see that it's complex?
Yeah, the same effect. Actually, they looked at the complex scale of fields. You get the same thing for ordinary scale fields.
Well, where does the Cantor come from?
The Cantor comes from because a Cantor set is a set of measure zero, and it looks somewhat like Cantor dust. If you look at the stability nets, they really solve into something that resembles a Cantor dust. Nothing neat behind it. Now, about a year ago, Yana and Shinsuke Kawai, they looked at large N, so they were motivated from inflation, where you have the order of a few hundred inflaton fields during inflation. Even at the end of the inflation, you have 100 to 150 fields, which carry the majority of the energy. So there you would get reheating where 100 to 150 inflaton fields contribute. Now, what they did is they did not incorporate that correction yet. So you solve the equations of motions for the inflaton fields, solve the equation of motion for chi, and again, see do we get permanent resonance. If you set all masses equal to each other, and you start out in phase, then this whole model becomes indistinguishable from an effective single field model, even during reheating. So indeed, you recover the same equation of motion and to recover resonances. So that's exactly the same case as we saw before for a single field. However, the masses are not identical to each other in inflation, and I do not expect them to be identical to each other in any realistic type of model. So if you now look at different masses, let's say you use the Marchenko-Pastoureau distribution for the masses as derived for inflation, there you see that the sum of bias word now has an offset simply because they run out of phase. This also this simply occurs during the first oscillation of the field. They run out of phase. You do not go through zero anymore. This means the pi field has a large effective mass and can also compute the non-elasticity parameter, which remains small, and you do not get any particle production. So I plot here pi is increasing. If I would plot the particle number, it's basically a flat line. You get whatever you start out with, and then it decays, like usually also like this scale field. So you do not have any transfer of energy from the inflaton field to your pi field. As a footnote, if you wait long enough and you start out in phase, you can get in phase again at some point. And then you can have a very short burst of particle production. Now, this is nothing that we expect to happen because we do not expect it to be in phase to begin with. But we see this effect here, so we can understand this too. But not done as well.
You expect this to be the same if you have multiple chi fields?
Now, you could do the following. You could couple each inflaton field to its own chi field and prevent cross coupling. Then, for each of those chi fields, you have a single field inflaton oscillating, and then you get the single field case again. But as soon as you couple more inflaton fields to the same chi field, you get this dephasing effect, which prevents the effective mass of the chi field to become small, and then you suppress resonance.
Okay, but you just need one chi field coupled to one inflaton.
Yeah,
have all that chi field.
Yeah, you can do that. That's definitely possible. But in many models, you have actually degrees of freedom which are kind of similar to each other, and it would be kind of astonishing if they don't couple to similar degrees of freedom. But if you can arrange for that, you can use the same field freedom.
Actually, is it easy to see how this generalizes if the coupling you have, instead of being chi squared, is something like some axiomatic coupling like phi f f tilde, where f is the gauge field strength?
yes, I think, well, I'm going to discuss the coupling phi chi squared. So you have the linear term in phi, and this, you will not get the suppression anymore because you have linear coupling to phi. Now, we have two kind of conflicting results. They're not really conflicting, because one is discussing two inverton fields, one is 150 inverton fields. But still, in the two inverton field case, we increased particle production, yet on with 100 fields, we got a very strong suppression, no particle production anymore. And there might be models around where you don't have a gazillion of fields, but you have more than two fields. And then the question arises, what happens in these cases? Because it's neither of those. This is what we set out to discuss and investigate recently. So what we did, we thought, well, if we do it now, we do it right. So we incorporate that direction right at the beginning. I'm building this expert on the best simulation, so very close to you for that. And we chose up to five inverton fields. So we can cause the one to run also in a finite amount of time. Each inverton field, we have to evaluate that on the lattice, put it forward. So it becomes more challenging to do those really high numbers of fields. But five inverton fields is not a problem. And we consider those three and four interactions. So quickly, what we use is a lattice easy code, which we slightly modify to allow for more inverton fields. And these are the equations of motion to solve. So frequent equations combined. These are the equations of motion for the inverton fields. And here's the equation of motion for the chi field. Now, if we have, we also have to tell you, we have to tell you a bit about the mass distribution. Clearly, we do not want to start out in phase and give them all the same masses, because then it reduces again to an effective single field model, but we do not expect this to be realistic. So what we decided to do is we spread the masses out over some limited range. In here, as follows. And this guarantees that the frequencies are not simple multiples of each other. But you can basically choose any ratio that you like, just not a simple multiple, you will get the same results. For initial conditions, we decided to give each field the same initial energy, simply because we have in mind that after multiple field inflation, the interesting cases are going to be those where the total energy is shared among the inverton fields. If you have the majority of the energy in single inverton field, then you do not even have to bother about the other ones. So this is the interesting case where all of them have comparable energy intensities, and since we did not have a concrete model in mind, the easiest thing we can think of, let's give them all the same energy.
The answer would be very sensitive to this assumption, though.
Yes, it will be sensitive to that, definitely. But we wanted to point out, since we already understand models, what happens if we give the majority of the energy to a single field?
Right.
Will be single field free. We now discuss the opposite extreme, but they all share the energy. And then if you have a mixture, let's say one field has a bit more than the other ones, they have to do the
simulation. So, in a model like this, the coupling phi to chi square is sum over phi I,
yes,
essentially. Then if you have different masses, then sum of phi I sort of add up to zero. That's essentially why it's suppressed. So it's really had to do with...
Well, it's not so much that the...
Because
they add up to zero, but that they do not add up to zero.
They add up to a very small number, right? Average.
The average is going to be smaller, too,
yeah.
But what's
the
important for driving path, is,
right. The driving path.
What's important for driving is that the effective mass actually becomes very small. So you would like them to be in phase that they cancel each other, or that they cancel each other.
Right.
What is preventing preheating is that they run out of phase, so that you're left with an offset, which redshifts like 18 minus 3. Good. Now, we also gave them some zero initial velocity, simply we have in mind that we have some slow roll inflation before, so they're not moving fast.
So, what happens if I take if I redefine my fields and I isolate the combination of them, which is non zero according to the initial condition, mm-hmm. and all the others, all the transverse ones, let's say, have zero initial condition?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would like to introduce an effective single field model. Yeah, with the transverse massless excitations or something.
You would populate those in the first run, and this now we populate fields would then prevent preheating. So the thing is, you can, you're perfectly fine with introducing effective singular degree of freedom during inflation, because you'll go around really in phase. They have all the same.
Yeah.
So here, they run out of phase. So it becomes misleading if you, you can define it initially in effective singular field, but it's not a good degree of freedom to follow in time, because you are repopulating the other perpendicular degrees of freedom. Whereas then you would introduce also cross couplings between fields. Here right now, the fields are not coupled to each other.
No, I understand, but somehow I'm questioning the physical difference between having your initial condition or having as initial condition one non-zero field, okay, and all the others set to zero. Because the difference between these two situations is just the field of definition. So.
Yes, and when you would introduce cross couplings. Maybe it becomes. You see here, I'm basically plotting the energy which is in the interconfluent fields, which is independent of how you redefine the interconfluent fields. And you are still left with this offset in masses. You can redefine the fields as much as you like, you're still left with this.
So you're basically diagonalized the masses, and in this basis, you wouldn't have diagonalized the masses.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. As I mentioned, you have cross couplings.
Okay.
Here we are. Good. Okay, a few more words about lattice easy for experts in the room. So we use the lattice of 128 cubed. Box size in here, so we cover weight modes in this interval. Regarding initial conditions, what I showed you in the previous slide were the initial conditions for the homogeneous modes, but you should also incorporate now fluctuations in the interton fields. And also in the matter field. That is easy, does it automatically, so I'm not going to dwell on this. If you're interested, you can talk about this later on. Basically, you choose then a momentum space from radial distribution and then transform back to real space where we do our simulations. I'm going to show you in the following three concrete cases. The first case has zero sigma, means this is the case where we would expect parametric resonance. This is the case that correspond to the previous two examples. Case number B, we have both a G and a sigma, and both have comparable contributions to the field. And C, we have a dominance of contributions to the sigma to the three interaction. So here we expect to see tachyonic preheating, here parametric resonance, and here maybe an extrapolation. So this is what we see. What I plotted here is the ratio of the energy in the high field to the energy in the inflaton fields. All mixed terms, like phi, chi squared, are not included in either of those, but we include the radiance of the field, we include the gradient terms in here. And this is time, tau, the same time we use throughout. The number of fields decreases from 1 to 2, 3, increases from 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Logarithmic scale, and whenever we hit something around 1, we would say yes, preheating is successful. We shuffled most of the energy into my chi field, and at this point, we should actually talk about decay of the chi field, thermalization, stuff like this. But our goal is can we get this ratio to be of order 1? Then we will say preheating is efficient. For single fields, you get the standard parametric resonance case, yes. For two fields, you also get it to work. You should note that the rise is comparable for those two cases, so the kind of effective Floki index, if you would like to do something like that, they are comparable. So this is consistent with Bessel-Wolff's conclusion that for two cases you still have parametric resonance. The small difference you see here between those two is primarily that you have two inflaton fields and one matter field, and they share the energy in equal amounts, roughly. So this accounts for this slight suppression, simply because now we have energy in two fields compared to the energy in one field.
So within two fields, I mean, if you change the initial conditions, how much will it change?
For two fields, it wouldn't matter at all.
It won't matter at all.
You would still get the parametric resonance.
So you always get the suppression.
Well, I wouldn't call this really a suppression. What you observe here is that the energy is equally distributed between those three scalar fields, and then they're all interacting with each other, shuffle around the energy. So this is not really a suppression. We should now discuss what happens to chi here, gets accumulated again, all the energy at the end of the day, between from the open fields. Now, the interesting case is what you observe when n is larger. So now we have three photon fields, and we suddenly see a suppression of 10 to the 3. So here you clearly have, you still have a burst of particle production, but you never get majority of the energy to your magnetic field. The majority of the energy remains in the photon fields. They oscillate, and there's not going to be another burst of particle production later. And this becomes even worse if you increase the number of fields. So for 5 fields, you obviously see a little blip here, but you do not get preheating. So the conclusion to draw from that is, if you have a multi-field inflationary model, you might get away using an effective single field model during inflation, but in preheating, it is actually crucial that you understand what is my inflaton. Is it composed only of one degree of freedom, or is it several degrees of freedom which run out of phase, and they couple all to the same degrees of freedom? And if you have more than 2-3 fields, you would expect parametric resonance not to be efficient at all. This slide I plot the variances simply to show where does Becker actually become important. The red curve is the variance for my metal field, and black to blue or green, these are my inflaton fields. And you see that the fields fragment and variance becomes of order 1 at the same time when you have preheating becoming efficient. So if you really want to get to this ratio to order 1, you have to do a lot of simulations. You can definitely not connect back reaction. For cases where you have more than more than 2 inflaton fields, we saw that you do not get parametric resonance in the first place, so you also see that the variance never becomes of order 1, so the fields remain essentially homogeneous. And we could have gotten away with not doing a set better simulation in those cases. But you don't want to find support. Now, case B, here we have now a mixture of 3 and 4 interactions. Again, I plot the ratio of the energy densities over time, and I increase the number of fields from 1 to 5. And the crucial thing to see here is that all of them become order 1, and all of them basically show the same increase in the ratio of the energy densities. This is due to tachyonic instability. And tachyonic instability is not sensitive to dephasing of the fields. To make it more concrete, the effective mass of the magnetic field picks up a term proportional to the sum of the chis, sum of the inflatons. And even if you run out of phase, you're still going to be half the time negative in there. So half of the time you have a negative contribution to the effective mass, and your inflaton, your magnetic field exhibits an instability.
Sorry, before, what kind of term did you have in the previous?
Second.
In the previous case.
Yes.
What kind of term did you have?
In the previous case, I had the interaction G phi squared chi squared.
Just last, you call that 4 leg, or you just call
I call this 4 leg. Maybe I'll show you the potential. And this is that one line.
So you just add G leg terms now. Oh,
okay. So previously, I had this type of interaction, and I said C leg is 0. Now I have both of them, and both contribute equally. Actually, this slight offset between the n equals 1 and n equals 2 to so 4 case is due to our initial conditions. We have simply a slightly longer phase of inflation still before preheating starts. This is not that important. The important thing is that we go up to the second. Now, if you only keep the tachyonic contribution and dial down the G in very small, you see tachyonic preheating. And again, something interesting occurs. In the increased number of fields from 1 to 5, lead is 1 field. And the greener you become, the higher the number of fields is. And you see if you have 1 field, you need actually several bursts of particle production to get this order 1.
I think you need here on three, these three oscillations on the inflaton field to get sufficient energy shuttled from the inflaton field sector to the matter field sector. If you have however more than two fields, you're becoming more efficient, meaning you only need one burst of particle production. You're right here on order one already. This means your inflaton fields do not even need to oscillate. They could go through zero. You shuttle all the energy from the inflaton fields to your pi field, and you don't care what the potential does afterwards. So this might be quite useful and interesting for models where the inflaton potentials do not show a minimum at the end of the equation. It could be a rounded potential. But you simply come to a point where this chi field becomes very light, and light becomes tachyonic, gets a tachyonic mass, and you get all the energy into the chi field without ever having to come back to this point at the origin. So this is, again, something interesting that happens if, when you increase the number of fields. You can also get it to work if you only have one field, if you fill it around with the coupling condition. But it's easier to achieve with more inflaton fields. Maybe not on time, so let's wrap up. First of all, what you usually hear about preheating is parametric resonance, and parametric resonance is not expected to work efficiently if you have more than two fields. If you want to get it to work, you have to make sure that they either run in phase, remain in phase, or you're going to have to make sure that they all couple to different degrees of freedom. I would say this is all extra work that you have to do in order for preheating to work. Generically, I do not expect these things to occur in nature. The most possible way to avoid this question is to have each inflaton field coupled to the same type field. Tachyonic preheating is not affected by this dephasing effect, but we even saw that it becomes slightly enhanced if you increase the number of fields, which is interesting because you don't need now the minimum at the end of the equation. So from a broader point of view, if you have now a multi-field model of inflation that is close to your heart, you should think a bit more carefully about preheating. You cannot naively assume that what you find in reviews about single field preheating actually carries over to multiple field preheating. It becomes much more model dependent. It depends on how you couple the inflaton fields. It depends on how many fundamental degrees of freedom you actually have at your disposal. If preheating occurs, you still need a phase of thermalization, and you have to bother about other issues like the Galvatino problem. But you could do also some nice things, GMT biogenesis. If preheating does not occur, if you don't like preheating because you don't like the Galvatino problem, you can say, it's actually nice that preheating gets suppressed. You can still have the OCU of preheating, and we can now use a multi-field inflation model to suppress preheating entirely. You have ordinary reheating, you avoid the Galvatino problem, and it's actually a feature of the model, it's not bad to the chamber. Okay, so that's my wrap up of multi-field reheating. Any questions?
The question is, in tachyonic preheating, there is a certain value for which the mass of the chi field becomes tachyonic, and then there is another value for which inflation ends. A priori, this might be two different values.
Yes, correct.
What do you have to assume about these two different values such that tachyonic preheating is efficient when you have more inflatons?
I would say the following way. You get tachyon preheating what occurs whenever the mass of the chi becomes tachyonic.
Right.
It is not dependent on where inflation actually ends. Yeah. If you would end it previously and you oscillate around, well, your metafield chi better becomes tachyonic somewhere in this region where the metafield oscillates. Otherwise, you wouldn't be heated in the first place.
Right.
So it's usually taken to be where the potential of phi is zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of following up on your comment of saying that there might be not a minimum, but there might be a runaway phase.
Yeah.
I suppose that then the mass becomes negative much farther away after the end of inflation. So then your simulation, which is based on probably an inflationary stage that ends there,
yes,
will change because it will not be in the seat that it will be at.
Yes, you may have to wait a bit.
But the point there is that you do not need to oscillate. Sometimes it's challenging to get models where you have actually a minimum of the end of inflation. And there are models around the inflation where you have a runaway potential. And it's usually quite challenging to get the energy away from that inflaton field, because at latency, you do not want to have a field running around on a runaway potential, because it's violate, you know, Newton's constant is not constant anymore, and you violate the law, you get fixed force constraints. So you would like to get the energy away from it. And tachyonic reheating is one way of getting the energy out of these fields which do not have the inflation. And I do not really care where inflation ends there, I only care if it occurs at some point before nuclear synthesis.
Okay, then the details of the simulation will be more or less the same.
Yeah. Well, I will not say in detail, so it's qualitative.
The feature that with many inflatons you reheat more efficiently.
Yes.
So it seems to me that what you're saying, so what really matters for preheating is that chi field becomes massless, right? So
yes.
If inflaton goes through a point where chi becomes massless, so in one dimension, for one field, that always happens because there's only one way that can. But if in more than one dimension, if you have only one point in a field space where chi becomes massless, then most likely you don't actually go through that point.
That's
right?
A very good question. So you're looking more maybe at the, and also rephrase this in terms of modular trapping, because there you usually discuss quantum enhanced symmetry when you have no high dimensional space, how likely is it to get close to this quantum enhanced symmetry.
Right.
And there is a suppression depending on the dimensionality of the locus of enhanced symmetry, or here I would say the dimensionality of the region where your chi field becomes zero. If you have two-dimensional, if you have two inflaton fields, it could very well be that chi becomes very light masses on the line. It doesn't mean a point.
But you assume it's a point.
I assume here that it really occurs when it occurs at a point. So what we observe here is actually a suppression due to the fact that we do not come that close to the point.
If you don't cross that. So it's not really the number of inflaton fields, but basically the comparison of the number of inflaton fields and the dimensionality of this enhanced dimension.
As you mentioned, there's a work in progress between Scott Watson and myself, and we look exactly at this question. How does this trapping rate, or how does preheating depend on the dimensionality of your locus of enhanced symmetry? And there are suppressions, you can compute them on the way. So basically, you always are efficient when your locus of enhanced symmetry is the dimensionality of your modular space minus one, you use some kind of random walk and get minus two for these things. But it's an interesting real world.
Okay, no other questions. Let's thank our speaker and
so we'll reconvene here at 2:00
and bring your cards here.